Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Heart disease is the number one killer for men and women in this country. What can you do to protect your heart? Well, we're going to discuss recent developments in medicine and treatments and some of the things maybe able to help you have a healthier life and a healthier heart. My guest is Dr. Richard Rubin. He's chief of cardiology at Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C., and he's in private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dr. Rubin, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
It's nice to be back with you, Shirley.
There's so many things going on. So many new medicines have come out in generic form. There's other new medicines that have been introduced. So there's a lot of things to talk about. So let's talk first, I think, about some of the recent developments, such as Lipitor coming out as a generic. First off, how many people take Lipitor? Do you have any idea? Is this a large number of people?
If we're upwards of 300 million people in the country, perhaps 40 or 50 million of them take oral lipid-lowering therapy by pill. Lipitor probably has about half that market, so that's upwards of 15 million people in the country on Lipitor. And I'm sure all of them are happy that in the last 90 days it's become available as a generic.
Yes, and that's going to make a significant difference in the amount of money that people have to pay. Because what is it? It reduced it by two-thirds or something like that? Somewhere in the, I don't know exact numbers. You may not either. But I know it's very significant.
When drugs first become generic, only a few manufacturers make them in addition to the original manufacturer, so the cost comes down slowly at first. But within a year or 18 months, many other companies begin to manufacture the same chemical product. And as more companies enter the business, the cost gets lower and lower. When it reaches its full generic price, it may be reduced by as much as 75 to 80% over
Wow.
its original cost.
That really is significant because Lipitor is expensive. I don't know. I take it. Now, I know that not only Lipitor, but a lot of other medicines are generic now. But I think that one really has a significant impact because of cost. And do you expect that compliance is going to be better because people will be paying less for this med?
I think one of the big developments in the history of medicine was in the mid-1980s when the concept of once-a-day pills, time-release pills, was invented. Prior to the early 1980s, patients on a permanent medication were sometimes asked to take it three or four times a day, which was very difficult. I can only think of myself if somebody asked me to take an antibiotic three or four times a day. It's difficult when you have a busy life. The advent of once a day improved compliance tremendously, and now virtually all the major medicines are no more than once or twice a day. Then you come to the issue of cost. Having generics available where the cost may be only 10 or 20% of the brand name cost is going to open up these medicines to a lot more people. With the down economy, you don't want people to have to choose between their rent, their food, and their medication. And generics do help out.
And unfortunately, that is a choice that some people have to make, painfully, perhaps.
We're very lucky now that in almost all the major categories in cardiovascular disease, hypertension, lipid-lowering, anti-clot medications, generics are becoming more and more available. Most of the medicines I use in my practice have been out for 10 to 20 years. That means the patent life has run its course, and in almost every category, good generics are available. In addition to Lipitor, a famous anticoagulant medicine, Plavix, is about to go generic.
Oh, really?
And some of the most popular blood pressure medicines either have become generic recently or are about to become generic, and this will be a tremendous savings, not only for individual people, but for the government who pays for a lot of the pills now.
And I suspect that consequently, you'll find people using them, and perhaps that will help improve the heart. I mean, you know, heart disease is such a often silent and deadly killer that anything that we can do to improve it. And I know you and I in the past have discussed such things as diet and heredity and exercise and all of those things. And if we have time today, we'll cover a little bit of those. But I'd like to talk about the newer developments and things that people may not know about. And And I knew about the Lipitor because, well, you had told me. So, and by the way, in full disclosure, Dr. Rubin does happen to be my cardiologist. He's kept me healthy. I had a heart attack a couple of years ago, and I'm proud to say I'm doing, I think, very well. So, at any rate, let's move on and talk about these generic drugs. They're out there. There's no reason not to take them because their components, their active ingredients are the same. Is there any, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, one of the things that always has concerned me is the black market drugs that make their way into legitimate outlets sometimes without people even knowing it. Have you seen this at all in your practice?
The rules of the game are that a generic drug has to be the same chemical, and when you make it up with its fillers and you pack it in the capsule, it has to be within 20% of the potency and activity of the original drug that it's purported to be a copy of. Now, in some very crucial disease states, 20% can be too much, and there's only a few disease states that are absolutely mission critical where we may insist that the patient remain with the brand. That would be an arrhythmia, which is an electrical storm in your heart, a seizure, which is an electrical storm in your brain, possibly a thyroid pill where people feel it if they're not at the exact level. But the majority of disease states, the generic is going to be close enough to the original that if it's just off by a few percent, it won't make a material difference.
So it may not be an exact duplicate. So I guess it's very important for people, once they've changed to a generic, to monitor their response to it and let their keep their doctor or doctors informed.
If you feel that for any of a 100 different conditions, whether it's reflux or arthritis or your heart or your blood pressure, if you feel that you're not responding properly to a generic, you need to keep your doctor informed. Now, unfortunately, there are issues of counterfeiting, and every once in a while we will have a patient all of a sudden, for no good reason, become a total non-responder with respect to their cholesterol or their blood pressure, and unfortunately we do have to suspect counterfeiting. What we do in that case is we fill in with a small temporary prescription from the local drugstore, or we give them some samples, and we try to reestablish control, and if we reestablish control easily, then we suspect that maybe that particular bottle is counterfeit. At that point, you have to take it back to the pharmacy and have them investigate it further.
Because they need to investigate their source for that medication.
Absolutely. I will tell you that the most legitimate pharmacies and legitimate prescription managers have very good sources. They're usually impeccable, but they can't inspect every pill in every lot, just like we can't inspect every apple or tomato entering the United States. So it is possible. I would say I've only seen that once or twice in 10 or 15 years.
So it's not really common. Okay, well, that's good news because we read a lot about counterfeiting of so many products, and you think about it and you become concerned about your medication because you're so dependent on other people when you're taking a medicine. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Richard Rubin. He's the chief of cardiology at Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C., and he also is in private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. And we're talking about heart health. Now, before I took the little break there, we were talking about generics. Now, one of the things that I've noticed, because I do take a medication that is a generic, and the way it looks is not always the same. Even though it's filled at the same pharmacy, their sources for that drug is different. And so consequently, how does a consumer know? I mean, I guess what you need to do is examine your medicine when you get it. If you have any questions about it or if it looks different, you may want to double check to see with your pharmacy that in fact it's correct. Is that a good advice?
Yes. As more and more companies make the same pill, they're not required to keep the color or the shape. And in many families, particularly where elderly people are involved, where children are helping take care of older parents, people do use colors and shapes to help people with their medicine compliance. So that means on occasion they're taking the pills out of the original bottle. They may be putting them in one of these plastic day reminders. Take these pills on Monday and these pills on Tuesday. And you have to be careful if you do that, because if you become too dependent on the shape and the color and the size, you may be misled, because each batch of a given medicine you get may be from a different source and may be slightly different.
And always ask your supplier, your pharmacist or your doctor if you have any questions. To me, that's the critical thing.
Absolutely. I think that it's good when people are involved in each other's care, whether they be home health aides or children helping parents or spouses helping one another. You should constantly recheck. I think if possible, it's not a bad idea to leave the pills in the original bottle. Most people can line up their pills next to something that they do each and every day. I know many pills people put their pills next to their toothbrush. Many people put their pills next to their fragrance, and then you just get in the habit of doing that. In that case, frequently you can keep them in the original bottle, so if there's any question, you can look at the label.
Right, and that is good because you can forget. And things change. And medicines don't always look the same, as you said. Well, let's go on and talk about some of the new things that have come out. The generic Plavix that you mentioned, which is going to be a big help to people. But beyond that, there are new generations of blood thinners, I believe, that are used in the treatment of heart disease. And I'm not that familiar with them, but perhaps you could give us some oversight on it.
There are several diseases in cardiovascular medicine where full anticoagulation of the body has been used, and that is when you have clots in your legs, deep venous thrombosis, if one of those clots moves up to your lungs, pulmonary embolism, if you're implanted with an artificial heart valve that needs anticoagulation, and if you have a chronic arrhythmia known as atrial fibrillation. These are some of the examples of where the people are totally anticoagulated for years, perhaps for life. Over the last 50 years, there's been one product, Coumadin, also known as warfarin, the generic name, which has been used to make the body anticoagulated. Coumadin has had some problems. The dose changes with your diet, if your diet changes. The dose changes if other drugs are on board that interact with the Coumadin. And then there's the issue of going to the doctor about 12 to 15 times a year to have your blood checked to regulate the Coumadin to make sure that it's neither too thick nor too thin, but just right. Then once you get your blood check, somebody has to call you on the phone and read to you over the phone what for many people are complicated instructions. Take this dose on Monday and this dose on Friday. So people get confused with Coumadin. As a result of that, companies have been working for years and they finally succeeded in coming out with some alternative oral anticoagulants that can be taken at home where there's no laboratory testing required, there's no interaction with what you eat, and there's much less interaction with other drugs. These anticoagulants are easier to use, and they're becoming very popular for that reason. Some of the brand names, and you may see this in television advertising, include Pradaxa and Xarelto, because the companies do advertise on television directly to consumers.
And perhaps this is something that I don't really encourage consumers to call their doctor because they see an ad on TV. But in this situation, it might not be a bad idea.
If you have trouble getting to the lab to regulate your Coumadin, the risk is that it's going to get off base. It's going to get off the mark. It won't be at the right level. If your Coumadin's too low, you could have a heart attack or stroke. If your Coumadin's too high, you could bleed in your bowels or your brain. So if you're having trouble regulating Coumadin, you might ask your doctor, are there other medicines that it may be simpler that don't involve this constant manipulation where more of a single dose can run for years without requiring a dose change?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is, that's a very good thing. That's a wonderful thing for people because my husband's cousin has been on Coumadin and she had a terrible time. Or warfarin, I don't know which, I'm sure she was taking the generic. She had a terrible time getting her blood regulated, and her doctor has switched her, and she says, it's wonderful. I don't have to keep running to the laboratory to get my blood checked, and she doesn't have to worry about eating spinach or some of the other healthy green vegetables which interact with that particular blood thinner. So this new generation of blood thinners doesn't have any of those problems. Do they have side effects? Are there things that people need to worry about?
Yes, I think as with any drug, your doctor needs to evaluate the risk and the benefit of any drug. Because these drugs create full body anticoagulation, you have to be alert for whether there's any bleeding in your bowels. And there's a very small, much smaller than with Coumadin, there's a very small list of other drugs that interact with these drugs, but the list is much smaller than Coumadin. And in addition to that, some of these drugs have shown better stroke reduction than Coumadin. That may be due to the fact that people take them more consistently, that the levels in the body are more consistent. So you're not only getting a convenience factor here, you're getting a stroke reduction factor.
Well, how do you know they're working if you don't have to have your blood checked? But would you go and if you took a similar test, we prick your finger and you get a test or draw it from the arm and the laboratory runs it, do you run it? Is that the same kind of thing that you would check to see that it's working?
Yeah, there's no strict monitor for these drugs, nor is any monitor required. For example, when you take a baby aspirin a day to keep the cardiologists away, there's no actual monitor for how much that is. So many of these drugs are in a category where one size fits most people without a monitor. However, in order for that drug to be approved by the FDA, they had to have a monitor. And when they realized that the vast majority of the population falls right in the therapeutic range without a monitor, then no actual patient monitoring is required.
Okay, so you can just assume that it's working for you.
Yes, we're aware of many, many drugs where monitoring is required. For example, thyroid pills, you need to check the thyroid function. And cholesterol pills, you need to check the cholesterol to
and
make sure.
And diabetic medication.
Diabetic, you need to check your sugar. But there are many other drugs, for example, acid reflux drugs. You take it, your reflux goes down. You don't need a numerical monitor for that.
Mm-hmm. So I see. This is a blessing. These new blood thinners are a blessing for people. It might reduce your patient workload a little bit.
We do spend some of our time tracking people down and reminding them to get their blood checked and giving them complicated instructions. And it has reduced the need to find them and interact with them over the phone and catch up with them.
Because it is critical if you're taking some of the older generation of blood thinners that you check and keep it on record. Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let everyone know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Richard Rubin. He's the chief of cardiology at Sibley Hospital, located in Washington, D.C., and as well as in private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Now, let's go back and talk about some of the components that we don't hear as much about in terms of heart disease as we do diet and exercise, and that's inflammation. What are we talking about when we're talking about inflammation?
Well, Shirley, since we've known about heart disease, we've known that there are really two big parts to how the plaques form in the arteries and how the arteries age. One is, what is the condition of the wall of the artery? When you're a child or a teenager, the artery is more smooth, just like the skin of a child or the skin of a teenager is more smooth.
Doesn't have wrinkles.
doesn't have little nooks and crannies like an English muffin. And therefore, the things that are in the bloodstream, like cholesterol particles or platelets, tend not to stick to the wall of the artery. That's why it's almost unheard of for children or teenagers to have heart attacks. And you can even have a fairly high cholesterol as a child or a baby, but the particles just won't stick to that nice, smooth arterial wall. Then as we age, the arterial wall gets roughed up a little bit. There are many factors that rough it up. High blood pressure bangs against the wall of the artery and roughs it up. Cigarette smoking will rough it up through chemicals. Air pollution, inflammation, infections, stress with lots of adrenaline, and most of all, aging. These are the things that rough up the surface of the artery. And just like a 90-year-old man or a 90-year-old woman doesn't have a smooth skin surface, inside them the surface of their arteries is not that smooth anymore either. Now the cholesterol particles will start to stick and the blood platelets will start to stick to the wall, and that'll make what we commonly know as plaque or narrowing of the vessels. We do everything to help people keep their vessels young and smooth. Although we don't take a picture of them on the inside, we can imagine that if they don't have high blood pressure, if they don't smoke, if they don't have diabetes, and if they don't have a lot of inflammation, we can try to keep the walls of their arteries smoother, longer, and therefore the cholesterol particles will be less likely to stick.
That's, you must be a wonderful teacher, because that is the best description of what happens to us as we're aging and our heart health. I mean, I'd never heard that before. I think that's fantastic. Thank you. Let's talk about the inflammation that we're talking about here. What is it? What are you referring to? I can understand the other things about the particles of cholesterol sticking to your arteries and so on. What is inflammation? Where does it come from?
Inflammation can be anywhere in the body. Some of the inflammation that can actually affect your blood vessels from afar could be the inflammation of arthritis, the inflammation of gum disease, The inflammation that comes with having a lot of infections, people who have frequent colds, flu, pneumonia, these people always have their bodies always in a state of alarm, and the immune system is always out fighting things. And, you know, the immune system's kind of like the fire department. The good news is they come and put out the fire. The bad news is they get mud on the carpet and the drapes, and they may beat down your door. So the more times your body's immune system has to fight off infection, and the more inflammation you have in your body, the more the white blood cells are out, so-called shooting up the joint. And that helps to, unfortunately, age the arteries and make them have a more rough surface. Once we think that a patient's arteries have been roughed up, then we take a very strong interest in reducing the number of cholesterol particles with drugs like
that. That has to keep anything from sticking. If it's not there, it can't stick.
If it's not there, it can't stick. So drugs like Lipitor and Zocor and Crestor and the other drugs will reduce the number of particles floating by. And the aspirin and the Plavix will tend to make the particles less sticky and less adhesive. So once we know that your arteries may be roughed up, we actually take a great interest in what's floating by in the stream. Fewer particles, less sticky particles. And we also, as I said before, do everything in our power. We can't prevent aging, but all the other factors that rough up the arteries, we try to get rid of them as we can. Smoking cessation, outstanding control of blood pressure, diet and exercise, stress management. Now, with respect to specifically getting rid of your inflammation, that may not be the job of your cardiologist.
Right. Somebody else would have to do that.
Somebody else will do that. You want to have good dental health. You know, a lot of people have read about the connection between dental health and vascular
health. Yes, I've read that.
Because bad dental health can be a source of chronic inflammation. You want to keep in good physical shape, because when your bones and joints and muscles are all inflamed, that may have an indirect effect on the artery. So keeping your health is almost like being in training for the Olympics or being in training.
It's constant.
It's constant. It never stops. There's that, you know, you can't necessarily have a year off or a few years off. It's a constant process.
Well, you know, I think we live in a more stressful environment than we used to, with the advent of so much technology, that everything is today. It's immediate. You've got to get that phone call. You've got to send that text message. You've got to answer the email. I mean, there's so many things that are going on around us now, and so much input that, I mean, do you think that these things, or is there any evidence that this kind of outside stimulation has an effect on our heart?
You know, stress is hard to measure, Shirley, but sometimes I think we all need to disconnect from our world and read a book or take a walk or look at nature or look at a nice painting or listen to music. And the more you stay connected, I think it's intuitive that you have more adrenaline circulating. You put pressure on yourself never to miss an email or never to miss what's happening on Facebook. And if your adrenaline levels are higher, it's generally thought to be not good for you. Difficult to measure, difficult to quantify, difficult to turn into a scoring system. But I think most people have that intuition that if we could all just disconnect, whether you go for a hike or whether you play golf or whether you go to the library and pick out a book. Any way you can disconnect is good.
Well, you know, there's so much talk now about people who are driving and texting and all this. First off, that's just scary as all get outs to me. But secondly, I'm one of these people that find driving time where I either turn on and listen to WTOP because of traffic and weather, or I don't have any outside input coming in. It's just a time of reflection and try to relax in spite of the traffic. You know, that sounds crazy, I know, in Washington, but I succeed in doing it most of the time.
Sometimes people make fun of Americans that we take the least vacation of many of the Western countries.
I'm trying to correct that.
We have the least downtime. We spend a lot of time in traffic. But I think preserving that is important for vascular
health.
And
it's important to know that it has an impact. You know what? That is the – I can't believe our time is gone. But thank you so much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Dr. Richard Rubin, Chief of Cardiology at Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C., and in private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.